On a recent Sunday, about a dozen family and friends of David Williams gathered at his gravesite. They were there to mourn and wish him a happy birthday. It was Valentine's Day, and if David was alive, he would be turning 19.
Happy birthday, David!
I miss you, gang. My guy! I love you, boy!
David was killed in Southwest Philadelphia about 9 months earlier, in May of 2020. He was a junior at Robeson High School, a handsome kid who overflowed with charisma. He was well-known and popular. The pandemic has made it tough for David's community to get together in person, and the friends and family took turns trading stories. Here's his sister, Shondera.
That was my little brother. Change his pampers, feed his bottle, watch him grow up, you know, borrow money from me, don't get it back.
David's older brother, Voss, says he's planning a big party for David's birthday next year, when hopefully coronavirus restrictions are no longer in place. And he keeps talking to his brother, trying to keep him close, even though he's gone.
I just talk to him in a spiritual form, because I know he with all of us, you feel me?
Still, Voss says staying positive is tough, and he struggles to deal with his anger sometimes.
I want to have revenge every day, you know what I'm saying? But that still won't bring him back. We just got to, you know, handle certain situations better ways without resorting to violence.
Like many other cities across the country, Philadelphia saw a horrific spike in gun violence in 2020, with surging numbers of shootings that have continued into 2021. In many cases, children have been the victims. Since January of last year, more than 400 people, 18 or under, have been shot. More than 50 were killed. The large majority have been Black males. The loved ones of those lost have had to navigate grief during the pandemic, mostly at home, often alone, or through a computer screen.
And yeah, he was just trying to get out, make it out for us. Like,
that's Nasira. David was technically her uncle, but was more like a big brother. She's a freshman at Robeson High, where David went. She was counting on him to show her the ropes at school. Instead, she's figuring it out alone.
Now it's hard. Like, I try to move on every day from it, but I can't. Like, somebody took it from me. It's just like, it's hard. Because every time I needed somebody to talk to, I just talked to him, you know? You know how you don't really trust a lot of people? So you just got that one go-to person, and that was him.
This is Schooled. I'm Kevin McCrory, and in this episode, we're telling the stories of students who were killed in the past year during the nation's other public health crisis, gun violence. Each death sends shockwaves of pain through a school. It touches teachers, counselors, coaches, and friends. This year, those communities have struggled to find ways to grieve, if they find ways at all. We start with the story of David Williams, a teenager who seemed destined for a bright future, whose life was derailed when the pandemic hit. Reporter Miles Bryan has more.
When Samantha Palmer was in high school, she had a rule: no dating boys in grades below her. But in her junior year at Robeson High School, David Williams, a tall, confident sophomore, made a move.
I was in the hallway with one of my friends, and he came to my locker, and he tried to talk to me. He asked me for my Instagram, and I gave him my Instagram. And then we started talking from there.
That was in 2019. For the next year, David and Sam were together all the time. A classic picture of teenage love. She was quiet and thoughtful. David was loud and joyous, a king of the school type. His teachers say when he was engaged in class, he showed real academic potential. Andrew Saltz teaches English at Robeson.
You know, the teachers would talk. He could bring your class to life. He could tear it down in flames. He just had that it. In a just world, he's class president. And it's not even close.
David and Sam spent a lot of time watching YouTube videos made by couples, sort of couple influencers. Eventually, they started their own channel, posting long, lightly edited videos of them flirting and goofing around.
What's up, SD Mob? Welcome to our YouTube channel.
So today we're going to be doing a Q&A.
The SD is for Sam and David.
What's up? I love you first, David.
She was getting in the lift. It was her first lift from my house. And it was at nighttime, she got in a red one. And it was like, I kind of snuck it in there. I was like, well, I love you. And I shut the door.
Like, he really shut the door fast. Like when he said it, I'm like, wait.
Cause it was kinda
this
like,
boy really just say that?
Because I didn't want to, like, I didn't want to wait to see if she was going to say it back or not.
When David wasn't with Sam, he was usually in the music studio in his basement with Quali, his best friend since ninth grade.
Our relationship was real tight. Like my right hand. Like my right hand man. Like you seen him, you seen me.
The friends were both aspiring rappers. David went by 215 Dada. Quali calls himself Lee Rambo. They stayed up late into the night, working and reworking tracks.
So he always told me, like, we just gotta keep pushing. We gonna be somewhere one day. Like, we're going to be somewhere.
At home, David had constant support from his number one fan, his mom, Tawanda Robinson.
He had a heart of gold. He would just forgive you immediately.
David was the youngest of 10 siblings, but the only one still living at home by the time he was a junior, making him Tawanda's baby. She doted on him, building him that music studio in the basement and encouraging him to pursue his dream of studying video game design in college.
I'm not trying to brag about anything, but, you know, he was very, very intelligent. Like, I have a folder full of colleges that just wanted him.
By David's spring semester junior year, January 2020, he seemed to have found his footing in life. He was honing his music, his grades were mostly solid, and he was going steady with Sam. Then.
Thank you all for joining me. Last evening, I announced that we had lost the first of what will become many Pennsylvanians to the novel coronavirus.
And we're prepared and we're doing a great job with it. And it will go away. Just stay calm. It will go away.
Philadelphia is ordering all non-essential businesses to close at 5 o'clock this evening.
In March of 2020, the coronavirus brought America to a screeching halt. Schools and offices shut down. Life changed for all of us in ways big and small. The first thing the pandemic cost David was his daily interaction with Sam. Her mom was terrified of getting sick and didn't want Sam meeting with people from outside the house.
My mom didn't let anybody in the house or let us see anybody. All I could do was go to work and come home. I tried to, like, watch movies and stuff with him on the phone, try to do something, but oh, no.
The pandemic also took a toll on David's academics. Andrew Saltz, his English teacher, says he never really showed up to virtual class. Once school went online, it was like he didn't see a reason.
He's there for us. He's there for the social. He's there for the relationships.
David also lost his job at a shoe store when coronavirus restrictions went into place. With his weekday routine out the window and without Sam by his side, David started hanging with people who made Sam and Tawanda nervous. Then, around 4:30 a.m. one morning, Sam woke up to a text message from Tawanda that said the unthinkable. David had been shot and killed. All Tawanda knew is that he'd gone to meet a friend she didn't much like.
I didn't believe it, so I called her, and it was ringing for a little bit. Like, she wasn't going to answer. Then she answered, and she was just crying, and she told me. And hearing his mom cry was the worst pain I ever felt in my life.
I couldn't say goodbye to my child. I couldn't see him. They let me see him, but he was already gone. And when you see your child laying in the bed like that, it's horrible. It's horrible. I couldn't kiss my son. I couldn't tell my son that I love him. It's horrible.
That was last May. Police still haven't made any arrests in David's murder. Sam says it's especially hard because she thinks if COVID hadn't hit, David would not have been in harm's way that night.
He would have been with me. He was always with me, always. His friends used to clown him about it, but I was really keeping him out of trouble.
For Sam, the grieving process has been a lonely one. She hasn't seen any of their old classmates or teachers since a memorial service held soon after David's death. She's trying to move on. She started at Chestnut Hill College and lives in a dorm out on the edge of the city, a world away from the epicenters of Philly's gun violence. And she deleted the YouTube channel they shared. Sam says she tries not to watch the videos anymore.
It's probably not healthy, but I really try to forget. I just put it away. I really didn't process it. I went to his gravesite the other day for the first time in a long time, and I just couldn't stop crying.
Like, I went there to clear my head, and I just couldn't get no words out.
Stuck inside by the pandemic, Tawanda has turned her enclosed porch into a shrine for her son.
I have his ribbon from the funeral. Then I have his picture here. I have a purple stone that means peace.
She painted the whole porch blue and white, which she calls the colors of heaven. But she says none of it helps much. Every day is just as painful, just as immediate as the day David died.
I break down a lot, more so than ever, because I just wish I can bring him back. I just wish my son was here. You know, I just wish my son was here with me.
Andrew Saltz says losing a student isn't new, but he says at least before the pandemic, he knew what to do.
If we'd had in-person school, we could have had an assembly. We could have had people talk about it. We could have had our own vigil, and we would have. It would have been, you know, horrible, but it would have been an amazing way to move on. And here it's just like, there's nothing. There's nothing you can do.
Salt says nearly a year later, he's just kind of stuck. His pain is still there, but there's no good place to put it.
Right now it's just really hard because you could do the work. You could bury yourself in the work. And I know that's not healthy, but that's what we would do and that's what we'd have them do. And right now you just sit with it. And I think about him a lot.
David's friend Quali has stayed close to Tawanda. He goes over to her house every week to take out her garbage. Really, it's an excuse to check up on her, make sure she's doing okay. Quali goes to David's gravesite when he can too, talks to him.
And I had seen like a red cardinal bird that's like your loved one coming back to visit you. Like when you need help or something, that also made me like feel good, like knowing that he was still there. He came and sent me a sign that he was still there.
Quali has been trying to process his feelings by pouring them into his music.
You can hear me, right?
A month or so after David died, he put out a tribute to his friend. It's called A Letter to Dada. He performed the track this year on David's birthday, standing by his grave.
I'm saying, thinking, I know that we had each other. My homie voice stuck in my head, the closest I got left of him. And now I'm in one new friend. I want my brother. I told my dog I had his back. I told him I had him covered. I'm saying, thinking, I know that we had each other. They said you're gone. I'm just like, I know you in my presence. I'm taking losses. Got more cold than some presents. I hope you meet me at the crossroads. I don't know where I'm at. You on my mind like
that. Was reporter Miles Bryan. Coming up after a break, we take a deeper look at how the pain of loss spreads after a homicide.
I've been hurt so many times and stuff, and so many people have died that, like, there's nothing left in me. No more emotions and stuff. Like, I don't even know how to react anymore. I'm just living, but, like, I feel dead.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Schooled. In this episode, we're telling the stories of how students, families, and educators are coping with the drastic uptick in gun violence that's coincided with the isolation of the pandemic. For many in Philadelphia's public schools, it can feel like a matter of when and not if. When will it be my turn to lose a friend? When will it be my turn to lose a student? For educators new to the system, that reality can come as a shock. Reporter Avi Wolfman-Aaron brings us a story about a high school counselor. She's had to come to terms with how gut-wrenchingly normal violence has become to many of her students.
On a Sunday night last July, high school counselor Isabella DeBilio was on her phone browsing an Instagram account called No Gun Zone. It's a page that posts breaking news about gun violence in Philly.
I follow it because I'm constantly checking to see, you know, if there are shootings in our school neighborhood.
DeBilio is a counselor at Frankford High School in Northeast Philadelphia. And on that Sunday night, she saw a post about a shooting in West Philadelphia, all the way across the city. Still, she felt a little pulse of worry.
And like it crossed my mind because like my kids are like, they're like my kids. So I like know where they all live. So I like looked at it and I was like, can't be.
Then Monday morning, a phone call.
And then sure enough, one of our social workers called and said Angela Walker was shot and killed last night.
Angela Walker and Isabella DiBilio both arrived at Frankfort High School in the fall of 2019. He is a freshman and she as the ninth grade counselor. When the year started, DiBilio got a call from Angelo's mom.
She said, I'm sending him to Frankfort because I don't want him to go to school in our neighborhood and get like mixed up with trouble over here. So he would take the subway for an hour every day to get to Frankfort. He'd leave his house at 5:30 in the morning.
Angelo's mom wanted her son to get involved. So DiBilio sought him out when the year began, made sure he got his physical so he could join the football team.
After that, I think that I was just a familiar face, so he started just like dropping in. And before I knew it, he was just like a regular. He didn't use his locker. He used my office as his locker. So like he would leave his coat in there, his books in there. Like sometimes I had to like physically push him out.
Angelo became part of a small group that the other teachers would call DiBilio's kids. He was fiercely loyal. One day, another group of students got in a fight inside the counselor's office.
Things got ripped off the walls. There was water bottles everywhere. I mean, you never know.
After it was over, DiBilio went to another office to report the incident.
I came back and Angelo had my office fully put back together and clean. So he was just like my guy.
Just as DiBilio was there for Angelo, Angelo was there for her. She was a 25-year-old white woman from hours away in Scranton, Pennsylvania. It was her first year working in a Philadelphia high school.
So here I am just showing up on the scene, like telling them what to do with their life.
Angelo's respect and loyalty were a kind of validation. She belonged.
It was definitely like a sense of relief to like find a really strong relationship with a student like Angelo, because then I knew he could probably influence other students to also, you know, build a trusting relationship with me.
DiBilio tended to arrive at school just as the bell rang and stay late. Angelo often got to Frankfort early because of his long trek to school.
So there would be days where I would get to school and he'd be standing at my office waiting for me.
When she heard about Angelo's death, DiBilio thought about what it would be like on that first day back in regular, non-virtual school. She pictured Angelo hanging outside her office. And now she had to reconcile that image with the fact that he was gone. DiBilio also had to balance her grief with her job. When a student dies, the guidance counselor becomes the point person. She helped organize a memorial at the school. She started a fundraiser for funeral expenses. And she called Angelo's mom to offer emotional support. She also contacted an outside therapy group to offer weekly virtual counseling to students who were friends of Angelo or had otherwise been impacted by gun violence that summer. And as she helped the students grieve, she quickly realized something.
This was my first time experiencing it, but it wasn't theirs.
15-year-old Annabelle Salvador was one of the students in Frankfort's grief group. She's lost two friends over the past year.
I've been hurt so many times and stuff, and so many people have died that, like, there's nothing left in me. Like no more emotions and stuff. Like, I don't even know how to react anymore and stuff. Like, I'm just living, but, like, I feel dead.
Annabelle said that whenever she feels that sadness coming on, she takes a hot shower or tries to go to sleep. Her friends cope in other ways.
Like, a lot of my friends get depressed and stuff. They start crying or whatever. And there's the other types that want to get revenge.
That's why Annabelle stays inside a lot, focuses on her schoolwork. It's the only productive thing she can do with that feeling she has.
It's like I feel empty and stuff, and I can't, like, do anything and stuff, but I just keep motivating me to, like, keep getting my grades straight and stuff and get out of Philadelphia and get into a good college and have a good job.
After Angelo's death, Isabella DiBilio started her own informal check-in system for the students that she knew would be hurting the most. Just a text here, a call there, to make sure they knew she was around.
I think it goes in waves. Like, there's weeks where, you know, I'll hear from the student nonstop, and then they'll, like, disappear for 2 weeks, so then I reach out and check in on them.
One of the students she focused on most was a kid we'll call Andre. We're withholding his real name because he received threats after Angelo's death. Andre was one of Angelo's closest friends, and he was really upset. But in the grief group, he had a kind of numbness.
he was like, this is just a normal way to die for the people in his life. Like, it's like having a heart attack. Like, oh, like they were shot and killed. Like, it's just another option of a way your life ends.
Still in private, Andre suffered. Andre's grandmother and guardian, who asked to be called Sonia Smith, told me that the last half year has been a struggle.
He became more leery, more I don't want to go out. I don't want to do this. His spirit changed.
Smith told me that Andre stopped sleeping and eating after Angelo's death, and he still refuses to take public transportation.
He don't catch the bus anymore. He said he don't even want to be on a bus because he don't know who's going to run into because something may happen.
Smith says things are getting better, slowly. Andre's appetite is back. He's sleeping again. A therapist friend of hers volunteered to help Andre for free, and he recently came up to his grandmother and says he thinks he has PTSD. It felt to her like progress, a way for Andre to label the thing he's trying to wrestle.
The feeling of hurt, it's just not emotional. It actually becomes painful. It sits in your chest. It sits like that knot you get right before you bust out in tears. But imagine that knot sitting there all the time when you constantly have that feeling of dread of what's going to happen next. And that's no way to live where you can't enjoy your life because you're so busy worried about what's going to happen in the next moment or the next second. You know, am I going to be next?
Smith says she knows the feeling. When she was Andre's age growing up in Philly, she witnessed a man shoot and kill a boy riding his bike. That's the same way Angelo died, on his bike, in his neighborhood.
It never goes away. You just learn how to deal with it. You learn how to live with your trauma. It doesn't go.
Andre's anxiety is not merely his own. His grandma feels it and absorbs it. She prays for him constantly. She won't go to sleep until she knows he's in the house. Her hope for Andre is that he finds the words to deal with his trauma and the path that leads him through to adulthood.
At the end of the day, his main thing that he's trying to do is survive. His aspiration right now is to make it out of, you know, his teenage years.
These webs of trauma and coping can feel endless. Each death sends more ripples through a school, kids, parents, grandparents. DeBilio, the school counselor, is responsible for about 450 students day to day. She tries to figure out who's hurting and offer a lifeline, but it's a lot more art than science. There's no method for curing the pain of all the people scarred by a student's death, and there's no method for curing her own.
For a long time, it was like anger. Like anytime I would think about him, I would get so mad. Because I was so mad that he died, that the system and the city and how like this is a reality for our kids, like I would like immediately get angry.
This is DeBilio's first time losing a student to gun violence, but she knew in her own way that it was coming. That's why she'd been browsing that Instagram page the night of Angelo's death. When you're a school counselor in Philadelphia, the thought is always there.
Because I know that it could happen. I just don't, you don't think it's going to. But you know that it can.
When DeBilio ends a text conversation with a student, she punctuates it with a little reminder. The exact words vary, but they all grow out of the same place and the same fear.
Be safe. Be good. Like, stay safe. Make good decisions. Like, I always try and, like, push that, like, just shoot. You know, shove it into the conversations a little bit.
Her last long conversation with Angelo happened in mid-June.
The last thing I said to him was, be good out there.
She added the little praying hands emoji. Angelo texted back, good night, with a heart. 3 weeks later, Angelo Walker was dead. He was 15 years old.
That was reporter Avi Wolfman-Aaron. Angelo Walker and David Williams are two of the more than 45 children killed in Philadelphia since January 2020. Their deaths didn't get the attention they deserved, but local papers and TV news gave them more credence than many, most of the people shot and killed in 2020, or any year, don't get more than a passing mention. You don't find out much about who they really were, what they were passionate about, who they loved, who was left to grieve for them. One death that didn't get much attention at all last year happened on April 23rd, a Thursday afternoon in broad daylight. Reporter Miles Bryan has this homage to Taj Williams, told by the teammates and coaches who loved him.
Taj was 17 and a senior at South Philadelphia High School. You likely haven't heard his name before, but the people who knew Taj Williams say he was unforgettable. They all start with the same thing, his size.
He was always one of the smaller students in the class.
I used to just call him small.
Miles, he was so small, you just couldn't believe how small he was. It was unbelievable.
That was Taj's elementary school teacher, the security guard at his high school, and his football coach, respectively. When Taj started high school, he was under 5 feet and about 80 pounds. His little guy status meant he was basically liked and accepted by everyone. A sweet kid with a goofy smile, he bounced around between different cliques. But Taj didn't find a home at school until a few months into ninth grade, when he met Robert Schloss.
I can't really remember my first time seeing Taj. Although being a wrestling coach, one of the things I'm always on the lookout for is for little guys. So when I saw Taj in the hallways, I'm sure I gravitated towards him immediately.
Schloss is the high school wrestling coach. He says Taj didn't have any experience, but he had tenacity. And in wrestling, his size was an asset. Teams get the same amount of points for winning in the lightest weight class as they do for the heaviest. And sometimes just being consistent and showing up could make all the difference.
He had a role. And I don't necessarily know if he had a role within a social group or within his friends. But I know that in wrestling, he had a role. And so, you know, he was loved by his teammates.
And Taj loved wrestling. He loved the focus and the camaraderie. Pretty quickly, he joined the lacrosse team and became team manager and videographer for football.
Kid had heart.
Edgar Mendez was on the wrestling team as well. He weighed nearly twice as much as Taj.
Like, I remember, if we had a really hard training session, like, you know, like, our bodies are literally steaming up, you know, like, those types of wrestling, you know, practices. I would be on, like, my hands and knees crawling just so I can just, like, get a corner to lay on. And then he would try to get me in a cradle and be like, oh, so who has the cradle now? And I was just like, oh, now he wants to wrestle again. And it's just like, yo, kid at heart.
Taj especially liked spending time with Schloss and Frank Natale, the football coach.
Every day he was in my office.
Taj often struggled in school. Natale's office became a refuge.
Sometimes he'd have issues in class, and I'd say, you know what? This is what you do. Just tell your teacher that you have to go see Mr. Natale, and would that be okay? And it used to get him out of trouble. So he would come down every day.
Natale would always be there with some peanut butter crackers or a pretzel or a dollar or two if Taj really needed it. He's done this for dozens of kids in his 50 years as a high school coach. It's the sort of personal connection that's hard to measure, but educators know can be make or break in building student confidence and keeping them on track to graduate. Natale says he looked for those moments and tried to seize them. Once, when Taj was a sophomore, the South Philly High School football team was blowing out its opponent, and Natale told him to put down his video camera. He was to suit up and get out on the field. His first and only shot at the big time.
And we put him in an outside corner, and he ended up making a tackle. So it made his whole life to be in a varsity game and make a tackle. And it's the only thing I feel bad about. We never got it on video because I didn't have anybody else to video.
During his junior year, Taj kept filming games with the football team, but he wasn't wrestling. Schloss says he fell behind in classes and ended up having to do schoolwork in the afternoon, at the same time wrestling practice was held. At the end of that school year, the summer of 2019, Frank Natale retired. That meant Taj couldn't go hang out at his office anymore when class got overwhelming. And then something shifted.
His senior year is like when you started seeing some differences.
Schloss says Taj frequently missed school, and the winter wrestling season came and went without him. As graduation approached, Taj had work to do to finish school on time, and he seemed to get more serious. He enrolled in a program to help make up missed credits. He was, maybe, coming back into the fold with his old teams. he could still make the lacrosse season. But when the pandemic hit, school shut down. Everything got delayed. So, on the afternoon of April 23rd, Taj Williams wasn't in class or his coach's office. He was hanging out at a store near his house. That's where he was shot and killed. The 119th murder in Philadelphia in 2020. By the end of the year, the total came to 499, the most in the city in 3 decades.
It was a late text, and the text was from a number that I didn't recognize. And so that was on a Friday night. I mean, I was sick for a week.
Word about Taj traveled around the high school like that. A text, a phone call, an Instagram message.
One of our wrestling buddies, he was like, hey, did you hear? I'm like, hear about what?
Teammate Edgar Mendez again.
Taj, he got, he died. I'm like, whoa. This, how did this happen? That one hurt.
Edgar, Schloss, Natalie, they aren't strangers to this. They've all lost people to gun violence before. But this, while being stuck at home, alone during the pandemic, was different.
Ordinarily, within a school, there is a communal way of grieving. And the fact is, you know, people knew Taj, but there's probably a whole lot of people that had no idea that Taj had been killed.
The worst part about all this is, without a way to remember together, it can be easier for the memories to fade. Here's the football coach, Frank Natale.
With this disconnect that you almost forgot about after it happened in the paper, after 2 weeks, because nobody was together to talk about it.
Legacy. It's something many of the people Avi and I talked to brought up. How can we honor the lives lost? What will be remembered of our loved ones? What will carry on?
Time during the pandemic has been warped. Days drag on in smaller confines, but just the same, months blink by in an instant.
One of the things we haven't been able to escape is the reminder of our mortality. COVID, gun violence, we all now face the possibility of getting the news of a death every time the phone rings.
Now, though, there is light at the end of the tunnel. In a few months, maybe a little longer, it'll be easier to grieve together again and feel that shared humanity.
And in the meantime, the friends, family, and educators we talked to for this story have found ways to hold on. Like Edgar Mendez, Taj Williams' old wrestling teammate, recently reached out to Coach Schloss about putting together an event to raise money in Taj's name. For Edgar, it would be a way to finally get some closure.
It's kind of sad that we couldn't really do anything during the time that, you know, he passed. That was kind of like, well, damn, you know. Well, still, let's not forget about him. Let's not forget about him at all. Let's not have this kid's name in vain because of a pandemic.
Angela Walker's memory lives in a pair of photos on Isabella DiBilio's desk. One of Angela wearing a half smile and a red jacket with a fur-fringed hood. The other shows Angelo slouched in a chair, looking at his phone.
These pictures were both taken in my office.
Angelo looks comfortable. A kid in a safe place.
So I keep this on my desk because this job is really hard and some days I feel like I want to quit. So I need to keep things like that to like remind me why I do what I do.
Angelo's picture tells her that there are kids who need a counselor. They need that anchor. It's a reminder that she has some purpose here, even on the roughest days.
For Tawanda Robinson, David Williams' mom, memory is a constant. She's overwhelmed with thoughts of her son all the time. It can be so painful that it's incapacitating, keeping her from doing much other than staying in her house. Some days, the most Tawanda can do to ease her mind is sit in the enclosed porch that she's turned into a shrine to David. There's a swing there where he used to like to sit. Tawanda watches and waits for any sign that David, her son, hasn't forgotten about her.
You see the swing is moving? You see it's rocking? I'm not even nowhere touching it. David knows. He's moving the swing. Do you see it?
Schooled is produced by WHYY in Philadelphia. This episode was written by Miles Bryan and Avi Wolfman-Aaron. It was edited by me, Kevin McCrory. We had field reporting assistance by Emily Rizzo. Charlie Kyer engineered and mixed the sound. Special thanks to John Musoni, Annette John Hall, and Xavier Lopez. WHYY's Vice President of News is Sandra Clark. For more on this episode, including beautiful photographs by Kimberly Painter, visit whyy.org/schooled.